Hello, creepies, and welcome to another middle-aged mini-episode on the Middle-Aged and Creeped Out podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hey, creepies, welcome to Middle Age Mini number 80. Nate is your sound engineer, and we are your hosts, Todd and Sean, and we are middle-aged and creeped out. What's going on, gentlemen?
Final mini of the year.
That's
what's going on.
Okay.
Is it?
I think so, right?
Yeah.
We're doing the math.
No, it should come out New Year's Eve.
That's right.
That's right. That is
great. I wouldn't lie to you people.
I had a lot of blank stares.
I know. We're all doing.
I'm like, is that right? Yeah, that's right. You're right. Yeah.
It's like the last day.
It really is. This, you think we would kind of be on how these things fall, but it's hard to keep up tabs on.
We make this up as we go.
Yeah, right.
I think they kind of have it figured out by now.
All right.
Our surprise. Why?
Whoa.
Are you all right there, Sean? Don't kill yourself.
Man.
We got doing a minute to record here.
Doing some MMA over there.
Don't try this at home, people. I'm a professional. Wait, what?
If you would have told me, I would have went,
whoop. I know. I hit that with my wedding ring.
Ooh. That was a little loud.
Made of steel.
You guys doing okay, though?
Yeah.
You guys ready for the last mini of the year?
If we must.
If we may. Learn to live another day.
Wow.
I'm a poet and I know it.
Yeah. The gumption. Okay.
The gumption, yeah.
Write that down.
Write that down. Creepies, thanks for joining us for middle-aged mini number 80. We're getting close to 100 on the minis, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Did I sound sort of loud there for a little bit?
I don't know. Did you turn?
You did.
Yeah.
Did you have
my knob got turned somehow.
That's all right,
man.
Though.
Why is it like blasting in my ears?
What's that?
Again, this is episode 80 for the minis. We should know what we're doing. This is. I think we're going backwards in our skill level.
Sometimes
you are asking a lot, Sean.
I think that Nate wanted to be louder than the two of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm softer now.
That's because I slowly turn you down.
Like the very first 5 minutes of the introduction episode.
Until I'm in the ASMR.
I got to listen to that again, man.
That was my
fault.
Here,
I'll recreate it for you. It just sounds
something like this. Yeah.
Sean's
in the
other room.
I was like, why is he outside?
Sean's outside with Slenderman.
That was my fault. I forgot my headphones.
No, that's okay. It's kind of funny.
Well, Todd, you're
actually amazing.
It's funny because you wanted
not
to.
Not even mad.
You wanted to redo it. And say, oh, let's do that again. I'm like, no, someday we'll get a big kick out of how horrible that was. That was number one. It was a start of.
What's amazing is people actually listened to it and then decided to go forward.
Keep listening.
Yeah, they're like,
really?
Sound quality.
Not that great. they should bring Nate into this. And we did.
Actually, the whole damn episode sucks. That's what they're saying.
We were quite
pardon my French.
We were quite polished by two.
Oh, professionals.
Yep.
Nailed it.
Right?
Still didn't have my headphones.
that's right. It was like the third
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I think it was third one. I finally remembered to bring them.
Now, see, I didn't have any until like the sixth or seventh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it was weird to hear myself for the first
didn't
time.
Didn't we have them
like,
when we came here?
I don't know if I can do this. And then, yeah.
Nice. Now, if we do it without them, it feels weird.
Oh, I know. I'm like,
I remember this distinctly. We were, we did up through seven at my house, and then
eight
was the first one here. And I thought we had our headphones on somewhere around when we started coming here. Maybe we did have it at my house. I don't remember. But I remember the split anyway from where, you know. But I was going to say.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I would have to go back and listen to it, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but you're right, though. I can't.
The listeners probably know better than we do.
I can't fathom doing the podcast without the headphones. But at first, I'm like, how much?
We make mention of it, but
weird.
I can't remember when it was. It was somewhere. I was thinking it was when we came here, but I'm not positive about that.
It might have been.
I can be lying. Lies, all lies. That's a long time ago.
I know. Look at that. Hey, Sean.
Oh, hey, we're recording.
Yeah. You want to tell the listeners what we're going to talk about?
This one's mine, so if this one's horrible, which I don't think it's going to be, I think it's going to be fun.
No, it's going to be great.
This is my pick, because, I don't know either. It is Gangster Ghost Stories.
Ooh.
Let me give a little, I'm not really going to give any backstory, because we're just going to talk about it. But how this came up, which we talk about, you know, like enjoying crime and mafia and all this. We bring up Al Capone on, time or two or 12. And
Jimmy Hoffa.
Jimmy Hoffa. that could be like a double episode, right? They're a friend of ours and a listener of the show, Nick Shrake. He was, we were at a basketball game and he was talking to me. He was like, "Hey, I'm enjoying the show, you know," and we were talking about it. And, he said, "You guys ever, come across, Lake Schaefer stories?" And I was like, "Lake Schaefer, like Indiana Beach." So anybody that doesn't know Indiana or is not from Indiana, there's Indiana Beach, Monticello. It's Lake Schaefer.
Yeah, we don't have an ocean.
We do not. We have a Lake Schaefer that
pond.
It's
a big pond.
Pretty dirty water. He said, I'd never heard this before, but he said there are stories, and if you look it up, there are stories about Al Capone and some of his cronies having a house on Lake Schaefer, and the reason that any mobster would have any kind of a lake house would be to dump bodies. And they're saying that bodies are buried in Lake Schaefer, and there's all kind of history to it. In looking that up, it's like, oh, that would be fun. But then it's like, why don't we just talk about a bunch of gangsters? You know, there's so many fingers to this story or these stories, and there's so many stories.
Is that a gangster's name?
To Fingers? Fingers McGee?
I just like the word cronies.
Cronies.
That's a great word, cronies.
So yeah, this starts with Al Capone and Lake Schaefer. So
hey, who's the
thank
who
you, Nick Shrake?
Nick Shrake.
Nick.
Thank you, Nick. He's a listener.
Nicholas. Actually, yes. Okay. And he and my son are good friends.
Okay.
Nolan. Shout out, Nolan. Nolan's been known to listen to our podcast a time or two. So
thank you, Nolan.
Since I gave him a shout out, he'll probably listen to this one, right?
Okay. Yeah, should.
Let's hope.
That's it sounds like a winner. Who wants to start? I've got stories galore.
I'll go. Nate, start it off, buddy.
I have Holy Name Cathedral.
Holy Name?
Holy Name. The cornerstone of Chicago's grand Roman Catholic cathedral still bears a bullet hole from a shootout in the street, which resulted in the death of Chicago mobster Jaime Weiss.
Jaime.
Weiss had been attempting to avenge the death of the North Side Gang's beloved leader, Dion O'Banion. On the morning of October 11th, 1926, Weiss's vendetta ended in his own death at the hands of rival Chicago gangsters. Several of the stray bullets lodged in the cathedral's cornerstone. One of the bullet holes is still clearly visible. Claims persist that it cannot be patched. Mortar refuses to dry and runs out, or pops out as soon after the repair. Could the ghost of gangster Jaime Weiss be making sure we remember him and his efforts to pay back his boss's death?
Jaime.
Jaime.
I'm glad my name's not Jaime.
Jaime.
That's just a funny
It's a
name.
Good one,
Jaime.
Right?
Jaime Hedges.
What do you got in there? Is that a Jaime? No, it's a Hemi. Oh, yeah. Jaime Hedges. Wow.
It just rolls right off the tongue, right?
Oh, look. What a cute little baby. Let's name him Jaime.
Jaime.
What's your name? Jaime Hedges. What?
Jaime and goodbye me.
Yeah. Sean,
what or you if you there? Go last name first, like roll call or something like that. Hedges, Jaime.
Hedges. Hedges, Jaime. Heidi ho, Hedges, Jaime. Never mind.
We've gotten quite tangential and away from the gangster mafia angle.
We're doing gangster? I didn't know what we're doing.
Gangster's Paradise, right?
Yeah.
R.I.P.
I have some favorite gangsters and mafia related people, but I like Bonnie and Clyde. They're some of my favorite. Never heard of them? No. They have at their ambush site, they say on a full moon or on the night of full moon, you can still hear the sounds of gunfire, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense since Bonnie and Clyde died in the bright morning sunshine. But regardless, it's an interesting spot to visit. Just pull outside of the road off. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It has the location. It is, let's see, geographic information. It's Highway 154, Gibbsland, Louisiana. Obviously, that's the United States. So it is kind of, it's truly out in the middle of nowhere. But they said that because they were ambushed. Mm-hmm. You know, they hid basically in the woods. They stopped. They actually were eating, and then they just filled their car full of lead.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
How'd they know gruesome. That they're going to stop there to eat?
They were eating in the car, actually. So mm-hmm. they had, like, I think there was a sandwich in between them that they, you know, were eating or were going to mm-hmm. eat or whatever. But there was a lot of leads that they were going to be coming that way. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other story. Got to watch the movie, man.
I have a long, long time ago.
I mean, me too. Yeah,
Warren Beatty's
in that. Gene Wilder's in it too.
Is he?
Mm-hmm. He's not funny in it. I mean, he tries to be a little bit, but he's a little bit of a cameo. Oh, it's fantastic. I haven't seen it in a long time though.
Who plays Bonnie?
I don't remember.
Warren Beatty's Clyde.
Okay. I can't remember her name. Darn it.
Oh, man. I don't know.
Okay. I have to look that up. But then also the car is also haunted as well. And now they say that if you go and look at it, it is very eerie and just you get this kind of like looming sense of dread and something's not right. So they talk about how they're infamous, you know, their killing spree and their robbery and all that kind of stuff and how they were. She actually had a limp, which is interesting. A lot of people mm-hmm. think of her, but she was, they say she was ruthless. I mean, they underestimated her and her cruelty because they see this, like,
she was pretty petite,
disabled, petite little lady, and she'd blow your head off.
Yeah, right.
If you looked at her wrong, you know, I mean, she wasn't messing around. It's interesting because they say, where is the car now? It says, answer that question is a rather difficult one. After the deaths of Bonnie and Clyde Barrow, the original owner, Ruth Warren, tried to claim the car as it had been stolen from the garage in Topeka, Kansas. Unfortunately, the sheriff told her that he would have to, or she would have to pay $15,000 to get it back. She took him to court over the matter. After winning the case, she sold the car to John Castle, operating under United Shows, but had to repossess the vehicle due to defaulting contract. Finally, she unloaded the bullet-riddled ride onto a carnival owner on a rental basis, who later went on to fully purchase the vehicle after touring the country and parading through many major cities in the U.S., the car went to Ted Totty, huh? and was sold to Prima Donna Resorts Incorporated in 1988 for $250,000. Mm. So anyway, I think it's in Nevada now, as I understand. Yeah, Nevada. Let's see. It is. Let's see. Finally, the actual Bonnie and Clyde car is discovered in a casino. Oh, it's in a casino at Whiskey Pete's in Prime, Nevada, surrounded by glass. But they say if you go look at it, it has 112 bullet holes in the body of the car. Clyde's blood splattered and torn shirt, which Clyde's sister has signed. Some of the pieces of the memorabilia surround the vehicle. So,
wow.
But they say that you just get this really dark presence when you're even around it. So it's pretty wild.
Very cool.
Whiskey Pete's. I'd love to go to Whiskey Pete's to see that.
Write that down.
Okay. I'll write that down.
Yeah, I always liked the Bonnie and Clyde story.
Oh, I love them.
I love the gangster. And
it almost sounds like it couldn't be true.
I know.
But it was.
And how long they got away with their...
And when they died,
spree of crime.
They had thousands of people. Like, they were rock stars. Like, they were celebrities. Yeah. They just wanted to look at them, try to get as close to them as
possible. People came to the scene and tried to steal, you know, cut off their hair and take anything they could to remember that crime scene. And they had to stop people from doing that because it's like, no, this is a crime scene.
Right. I've got one here from the Minnesota Daily. Ghost, Gangsters, and More, a closer look at one of St. Paul, Minnesota's spookiest spots. It says the Wabasha Street Caves are rich in history and ghostly lore, making them the perfect place to check out during October. A gangster's safe haven, a speakeasy, a mushroom farm, and a discreet underground nightclub. And I've seen videos on this place. The Wabasha, I think is how you pronounce it, street caves have filled many roles over the last century, each with its own haunting history preserved within the sandstone walls. The caves recently reopened under new ownership, and their legacy lives on through tours and events that give visitors a glimpse of Era's past. But this history lesson has a chilling twist. From unexplainable whispers to guests from the other side, ghost stories and sightings are plentiful at the St. Paul site, making it the perfect place to explore during the month of October. It says the man-made caves were originally constructed, in the 1800s when the era was mined for silica to be used in glass manufacturing. It says in the early 1930s, construction of the infamous Castle Royal nightclub began inside the caves. it became a sort of safe haven frequented by Minnesota's most notorious gangsters, among them John Dillinger, mm-hmm. Fred and Arthur, Doc Barker, and Babyface Nelson, and others. Since reopening the caves, since reopening, the caves have brought back some of their traditional events with like tours they're offered weekly on Saturdays and Thursdays, and they're gearing up for their St. Paul gangster tour. They also offer swing nights and swing dance lessons. Says the caves are definitely haunted. Donna Bremer, former co-owner of the Wabasha Street Caves, everybody that's worked there has had an experience, and we find that the spirits get more active in October for some reason. And then lastly, it says for tour guide Brett Williams, ghostly encounters are an everyday occurrence. There will be whistling. There will be footsteps. It's bizarre, he said. I've never seen ghosts so bold.
Hmm.
So interesting. Write that down, Sean.
Write it down.
St. Paul, Minnesota. Wabasha Caves.
Wabasha. I think it's interesting. They say about all the, we talked about the lakes being a popular place for gangsters. And there's one in Wisconsin. Every time I was looking up the Lake Schaefer, they were talking about up in northern Wisconsin being a popular hangout for a lot of, you know, Capone and Lucky Luciano and all these different, is this particular house. And there's a lot of hauntings there with a lot of these ghosts. So
yeah, a lot of the Midwest and a little north of us. Yep.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
The deeper the lake, the better, right?
That's right.
I have another one from Chicago.
Chicago.
St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Oh, yes.
This nondescript patch of grass abutting a parking lot in the Lincoln Park is a point of pilgrimage for countless true crime pilgrims each year. The site of the bloodbath of February 14th, 1929 is still said to bear ghostly marks of the cold-blooded killings through the garage in which they happened are long gone. Though the garage
I do is that gone. All the time.
The ghostly rattle of machine gun fire, a phantom dog's urgent bark, and dark gangster-like figures and fedoras have all been reported here. Residents of the building that flank the site say that after a fresh snow, you can sometimes see the outline of seven bodies in the snow where the bodies fell on that blustery morning long ago.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Let's see when the next snow is, and we'll go up and
go up and check this investigate.
Out. I'm down. Yeah, I've always loved that piece of history.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about him so much, and there's so many stories about him. But Al Capone, there are, you know, from Alcatraz to his mansion down in Florida, to all these different lake houses, to places around Chicago, and just all these stories about him and his ghost appear. But I think this is interesting. It says Al Capone, one of the greatest criminals to ever exist, supposedly saw the ghosts of his victims. We're talking about the Valentine's Day Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Al Capone was a notorious American gangster whose multi-million-dollar Chicago operation in bootlegging, prostitution, and gambling dominated the organized crime scene for nearly a decade. At the height of his power, he employed over 1,000 gunmen in his service and had up to half of the city's police force on his payroll. Yet in his final years, he had descended into a frightening, quivering mass who would scream out at night for Jimmy to leave him alone. Did Al Capone suffer mental illness in his final years, or was he haunted by one of his hapless victims? And they say it was the syphilis, right, that was eating his brain.
Yeah.
So Alphonse Gabriel Al Capone lived from 1899 to 1947, was born in Brooklyn, New York, the son of recent Italian immigrants. His interest into a life of crime began when he moved to Chicago and became a friend and bodyguard to Johnny Torrio, head of a crime syndicate that illegally supplied alcohol during America's Prohibition era. They said he was so ruthless, but he was so timely and so professional that he just like went up the ranks so fast. So it was going into the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. By 29, Capone dominated the illegal liquor trade in Chicago. Other racketeers known as the Northside Gang vied for a piece of the profitable bootlegging business, and among them was Capone's longtime rival, Bugs Moran. Capone decided that Moran was too big of a threat and had to go. On the morning of February 14th, 1929, Capone's men, opposing police, launched a fake raid. We know the rest, what you were just talking about. Without proof to tie him to the massacre, Capone had to be brought in on other charges. So in May 1929, Capone was arrested for carrying a gun during a trip to Philadelphia and was sentenced to a prison term in Philadelphia's Eastern State Penitentiary. Al Capone, being tormented by the ghost of his own victim, Capone said his connections ensured that he was given the top treatment in prison, which we've seen that before. Some of his cells were pretty amazing compared to the other ones.
Oh, yeah.
While other prisoners suffered in bare concrete cells with a simple slab for a bed, Capone's cell was adorned with fine furniture, oil paintings, and a radio. But his luxurious cell did little to make Capone's stay a comfortable one. It was not long before the rough and tough crime boss had transformed into a weeping and terrified mess who would send out blood-curdling screams at night, shouting for Jimmy to leave him alone. For many people believe that Jimmy was one of the ghosts of Capone, of one of Capone's victims, who would torment him night after night. Indeed, one of the seven victims from the St. Valentine's Day Massacre was named James Jimmy Clark. Originally born Albert Kalsalek, Jimmy was Bugs Moran's brother-in-law and died on that bloody February 14th. So can you imagine?
Nice.
So one of the best ghost stories is against Al Capone.
Yep. I have one here from Kansas City. It's a famous one. I've heard this a few times mentioned on podcast. It's called the Kansas City Massacre at the Kansas City Union Station. The sun was shining brightly over Kansas City, Missouri on the morning of June 17th, 1933. Outside Union Station, the usual flurry of activity was taking place as people came and went on the arriving and departing trains, and crowds milled about, hurrying to catch their train as it was leaving the station, or greeting loved ones who had just arrived by rail. Suddenly, the pleasant day was shattered by the sound of machine gun fire echoing from the plaza parking lot. People began to scream and run for their lives, and automobile tires squealed. Men's voices cried out in anger, and over came the harsh retorts of gunfire. By the time that it finally came to an end, five men were dead and two others were wounded. Blood-soaked bodies were twisted inside a bullet-scarred 1932 Chevrolet, and others lay sprawled out on the pavement outside, glistening with crimson gore. What no one knew in those panic moments was that six of the victims were law enforcement officers, three of whom were agents of the Justice Department's Bureau of Investigation, which was the forerunner of the FBI. The seventh man who lay dead, with most of his head blown away, was a criminal who the police officers and federal agents were returning to Leavenworth, a prison from which he had made one of his famous escapes. His name was Frank Nash, and he was one of the most successful bank robbers of the Depression era. Nash had been nicknamed Jelly because of his uncanny ability to escape from even the most secure prisons. But it was not only prison that Frank Nash escaped from, but some say that on the day of the Kansas City Massacre, Nash managed to escape from the grave as well. His body may have been shattered by bullets that morning, but his spirit has managed to survive. I just have a couple more paragraphs to play off of that. It says, the ghost of Frank Jelly Nash, it says, but whatever happened, the end result was the same, and Frank Jelly Nash had his life instantly snuffed out. Whether he was killed by accident by a shot that he never saw coming, or whether he was slain by his friend Vern Miller, his spirit now refuses to rest. To this day, local stories have it that his ghost can still be found wandering through Kansas City's Union Station. Says, does he walk that last stretch through the station on his way to the lawman's car and to his doom? Or is it that he's searching for his killers, wondering what became of the men who betrayed him back in 1937? And it says, the ghost of Frank Nash is perhaps the most commonly reported specter connected to the massacre.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, I've read that one before. Mm-hmm. It's a good story.
Pretty famous one. Man. Yeah.
Jelly. I like it.
Jelly. Jelly. Yeah. Anybody got anything else?
Again, another one from Chicago. And again, it's connected to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Oh.
This is the Green Mill Cocktail Lounge. This swanky, perfectly preserved throwback to Chicago's jazz age remains a popular uptown hideaway for music fans. gangster buffs, and ghost hunters. The bar was reportedly Capone's favorite lounge, and some say his figure can still be seen in a corner booth or slipping out the back door. Joining his spirit here is the ghost of gangster Machine Gun Jack McGurn, the tavern's erstwhile manager. McGurn was Capone's lead assassin and reportedly the head gunman in the St. Valentine's Day massacre. His ghost is sometimes seen, still seen, pouring cocktails for long dead patrons.
Oh, nice.
It's exciting.
I like that.
Let's go there.
Write it down, Sean.
I will. Oh, absolutely.
I think Al Capone's guaranteed. Been seen everywhere, basically.
Right?
Yeah. I'm sure that man...
He's sitting in the bathroom or like
oozed.
Hey, Al.
Oozed energy.
In Chicago, he was put in Alcatraz.
He's the man.
He was in Philadelphia.
He's well traveled.
Eastern State Penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
Died in Florida.
Florida. Yep.
Yeah. So I think Al's getting around.
He's been everywhere, man. Right.
He's been everywhere, man.
One of my dad's favorite gangsters is John Dellinger, mm-hmm. Indiana boy.
JD. Right?
He's born in Indianapolis, and he died in Chicago. He's just a sly-looking guy, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was cool.
Broke out of Crown Point Jail, which we've talked about that before, but mm-hmm. the movie Public Enemies in 2009, it was directed by Michael Mann, depicts the legend of gangster John Dellinger. The FBI's attempts to bring him down. The film adaptation stars Johnny Depp as Dellinger and Christian Bale as Agent Melvin Purvis, the man appointed by J. Edgar Hoover, who was obsessed with taking down Dellinger. Anyway, Dellinger had quite the life. Very interesting. The funny thing about him is his death, which some people say that they see his ghost in the theater that he got shot just outside of, mm-hmm. the woman in the red dress story. Other people say they've seen him in the Crown Point Jail and different places, you know, where he was robbed. And so his ghost has been busy.
They even say, like, because he lived in Mooresville, Indiana, mm-hmm. just west of us. And yeah. they said they see him there, too.
See him there, too. So he hangs around. The like
boyhood
he's still,
house.
Yeah. So there are lots of legends. It says several inconsistencies were discovered upon Dellinger's death that have contributed to his legendary status. Several witnesses claim that the man who was shot had brown eyes, as does the coroner's report, but Dellinger had distinctly gray eyes. Body had signs of rheumatic heart disease that Dellinger was never known to have. The body might have also shown signs of childhood illness that was not recorded in Dellinger's early medical files. In 1963, the Indianapolis Star received a letter from a sender claiming to be John Dellinger. A similar letter was also sent to the Little Bohemia Lodge, which was connected to him as well. The gun on display for years at the FBI headquarters was allegedly used by Dellinger against FBI agents outside the Biograph Theater in Chicago. On the day of his death, was not his and was recently proven to have been manufactured years after his death. It also says that, so there's stories about it not being him. His sister apparently did ID the body mm-hmm. as positive because it had a birthmark or scar right, or whatever right. that he had on his leg. So that's an interesting thing. Like, wow, do we really see his, you know, did he live on? Did he not? Which I think he did die. The other interesting thing is that he is buried under several feet at the of concrete at the Crown Hill Cemetery in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. The Allison mm-hmm. Mansion is close to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that too. What is the Fairbanks Art and Nature Park's closer? Allison Mansion and the Ruins are close to his grave site. But it says the body of one of the world's most famous outlaws is covered in cement and iron to prevent it from being stolen. His dad and the family said they did not want it to be desecrated or anything like that, so they have kept it very fortified. But people still leave pennies on his grave.
Oh, that's cool.
Respect or luck or to say, hey, I don't know, you know, whatever it is. But so he's an interesting guy. It's just they knew from the desecration of other, you know, say James Dean, an Indiana boy too. They desecrate people's gravestones because they want to have a piece of that person, whether they're famous, you know, for good reasons or for infamous reasons. But so the family definitely wanted him to keep him as protected in death as possible.
Yeah, I've always liked John Dillinger.
Mm-hmm.
His stories. Yeah, yeah. He broke out of the one jail with the wooden gun. Yeah,
right.
Stole,
yeah.
I mean, stole the chief's car.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty. He's actually pretty cool. Like, I think, I don't know.
He was a smooth dude.
He wasn't all a killer. I mean, he would. He did kill somebody. I mean, he did kill like one or two. But it's not what he was out and about doing. He was a bank robber, you know.
Yeah. He was sly. So, he was ladies' man. He'd always and he always calm, cool,
and
collected.
Only, I think, 37 when he died. Yeah, he was
young.
I think he was 37. Yeah, young. But, right outside that Chicago theater, they set him up.
There was a couple of honorable mentions. Mm-hmm. There, Bugsy Siegel, the founder of Las Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. The Flamingo.
He worked for Murders, Inc.
Uh-huh, right, which we're going to talk about them. That's what I was going to say. This links to Murders, Inc. for sure. Mm-hmm. And then Lucky Luciano. There's ghost stories about both of those gentlemen's lives and their past and their gangster history. The interesting thing about Bugsy Siegel is the pictures of his dead carcass.
Like, oh, yeah, on the couch.
Annihilated on the couch.
He got shot.
That's where a lot of his story, you know, his ghost supposedly still haunts.
Yep.
That area. So, yeah, that's just how tragic he was quickly.
And you talk about a cool cat, man. He had good looks.
Yeah.
He was, you talk about sly and, yeah. And
also a good movie, Bugsy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've seen parts of it, but yeah, I love all. I listen to, I don't know, three or four different mafia mob type podcasts, and you know they go back to the good old day 20s and 30s, and then they go mm-hmm. You know the 80s, 90s, even today. Yeah,
shout out,
love
to
those stories. So.
Dick Tracy, I have
love
to
that movie.
Yeah. I did too. Yep,
we talked about that at my wife's because her brother had his surgery, so we celebrated it with him a week early, and so he hates it. And,
he hates it.
Yeah. And then I think her brother, Ben, and Josh's partner, Jonathan, I love it.
So
we're talking like
Dick Tracy and Duck Tracy.
Jonathan was like, well, if Josh is going to fall asleep, that's the movie he'll watch. And mm-hmm. We were just like, no way. That's a great movie, man. That's Madonna, you know, I'm not a big Madonna fan, but
Al Pacino's in it.
Did a good role.
Yeah. All the names, all the, you know,
Daffy
the
Duck.
Mole and,
remember
and
Daffy Duck playing Duck Tweasy?
Mm-hmm.
That makes me think of that, too. Boy. Both good.
What was the...
Yeah, Al Pacino, though. Yeah.
The one gangster mm-hmm. with the flat head.
Oh, yeah. And
I think it was Flathead.
Was it Flathead?
Yeah. I love those names, yeah. I remember collecting the cards that mm-hmm. McDonald's had. We go around getting those cards and, yeah. Dick Tracy, that's a good movie. Yeah.
Well, Mumbles.
Yeah. Flat Top.
Flat Top.
That's
yeah.
it. Flat
yeah,
Top.
Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Flat Top. And that's the actor is really, really good. I'm mm-hmm. Trying to think of his name. That's good. That's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Warren Beatty was Dick Tracy.
Oh, yeah. Warren Beatty's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And the walkie phone watch.
Mm-hmm. Elijah got from his uncle Josh his old Apple Watch. So that was his Christmas present. Oh, he's all about it. He's got it linked up to his phone. He can talk on it. And I mean, he's got all his apps on there. So
mm-hmm. to go back to...
That's how it started. That's how we got... I go, it's just like the Dick Tracy watch. Mm-hmm. And then John's like, I love that movie. And Josh's like, I hate it. And yeah. Anyway.
Before we go,
yes.
John Dillinger was 31 years old when he died.
Oh, 31.
Man, wow. In 1934 is when he died. July 22nd.
Wow, I thought he was 37.
Hmm. Which
was
that sounded right to me. Yeah,
young,
but
yeah,
31,
young.
Holy moly!
Mm-hmm. If that was really him, it was him.
It was him.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, they wouldn't bury him under that much concrete and iron.
Live hard, die hard.
And they said he was a fantastic athlete. He played baseball. He actually played, I believe, semi-professional. You know, or could mm-hmm. have played in the
He's
big
like,
leagues.
Yeah, I'm going to crime.
Yeah, yeah. They said, and you know, Al Capone was a great athlete. He played baseball, very good athlete.
I've heard that as well. Isn't that crazy?
But it's all. I mean, that's what they did.
Yeah.
And baseball was back then. I mean, basketball and football was around, but it was baseball was the
throw the bums the out, right?
Yeah,
and they did.
Well, that was a fun episode, fun topic. I think the creepies will enjoy that. It's always fun to talk about the gangsters.
Yeah. See. You see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go to this guy to my right. Nate, what do you got?
It's just been a gangster's paradise. And that's a wrap.
Poor Coolio.
No, I think he would.
R.I.P. Coolio.
He would like that. Yeah.
I think he would like that.
He would.
We want to thank you, Creepies, for listening to our Middle Age Mini number 80 and our discussion on gangster ghost stories. And until next time, we will talk to you later, and Happy New Year.
Bye. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. See ya.